Hello and welcome to Becker's ASC virtual event. We are excited to have you join us for today's session, Strategics versus Health System versus PE Partners, the pros and cons, sponsored by Merit Healthcare. I am Margo Vaselli with Becker's Healthcare and I'll be your moderator for today's session. Before I introduce today's presenters, I would like to go over a few housekeeping items. You can submit any questions you have throughout the presentation by typing them into the Q&A box that you see on your screen. You'll also find a few other engagement tools on your dashboard. Be sure to check out our resources section and fill out the event survey. And finally, the session is being recorded and will be available on demand following today's event. We will send you instructions on how to access the on-demand recordings once today's event concludes. Today, we are being joined by two leaders from Merit Healthcare, Rich Searles, Partner and Managing Director, and Dr. Jay Przanski, Vice President of Development. At this time, it is now my pleasure to turn the floor over to our presenters to begin the presentation.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for having us. Excited to be here virtually. I thought we'd get things kicked off by discussing reasons to sell and the final decision to sell or to partner, I should say. As Jay and I travel across the country, we've had many, many clients throughout the years, and not all the reasons that someone goes down the partnership path or seeking a partner is the same. So with that, Jay, I thought maybe you'd share a little of your experience in discussing with our clients through the years reasons for them going to market.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. From having been a practicing doc with actually 19 offices and enjoyed independent practice, but also from knowing the surgery center side as well, and those are the areas we'll really be talking about because those are a big bulk of the clients we represent. In both instances, in practices and ASCs, and we can get into more detail about each one and the different reasons because there are different pressures on each one of those entities. But usually people don't seek an alliance or sale or any change if things are going well. You know, if your life's good and your income keeps improving, whether it's a surgery center or private practice and you have more patients than you need, the question of why seeking a partner, you know, is really mute unless maybe you want to retire and you're looking for an exit strategy. But as we know more and more, as medicine's evolving and healthcare in general and how high our healthcare costs are, there's a need for change and therefore pressures are being put on practices and ASCs. So, Rich, do you want to talk about, you know, how you see the clients, you know, both on the ASC side and, you know, physician practice side that come to us and some of the reasons or some of the concerns they have when they come to talk to you?
Sure, sure. And I think, you know, whether they're able to articulate it or not, right, there's two main reasons why they come to us or have discussions with us about it, right? One is the category of growth, right? We have practices and surgery centers who've done an excellent job to date on building successful practices or ASCs. However, they feel that, you know, being a physician and running one of these organizations, they're at their limits from a resource standpoint and unable to achieve the growth initiatives they believe they can achieve in their respective markets. So that's one of the major reasons, right? They're looking for a partner who can come in and help them achieve growth that they can't handle on their own. And the other aspect we see really boils down to risk, right? One's risk tolerance. You know, over the past 10, 20 years in healthcare, there's been such dramatic shifts, even though we feel sometimes it's at a glacial pace, the change in healthcare, there has been these dramatic shifts. So we get a lot of clients coming to us saying, you know, I am uncertain of what the next 5 years looks like. You know, I'm confident in our practice, our surgery center, our surgical hospital, what we've built. But the unknown, the being a smaller entity makes us more nervous for the long-term viability. So it's seeking a partner who can provide that stability, the viability long-term. And a lot of times what we see between risk and growth and the driving factors, and they can be mixed and they, you know, one partner can have more of a growth mindset, the other partner have a risk tolerance level that's lower. We see them really driving towards who they're seeking in a partner, whether it's strategic, financial, and we'll get into that in a little bit on the differences between the two. But those are the two main factors I've seen over the years, Jay.
Yeah, just to add to that, you know, looking at each market, it really is interesting because I'm out in California, and in California, you know, managed care came here probably at least 25 years ago. We have big systems such as Kaiser and Sutter and just many more evolving. And private practice really has shrunk. It's still an important part, but rather than the old days where it being a pure competitive marketplace, it's really become more of a, I guess, to use the financial term, oligopoly, where it's really gone to, you know, just a limited number of main players. So you might have a Kaiser in the system, a couple of the teaching hospitals and some other hospitals that have foundation models and have bought medical groups and big medical groups. And then you have the third sphere, which is the doctors in private practice. And so a couple of things are happening, whether you own a surgery center or a practice, is that two big trends. One is primary care on one of the target markets of the big medical groups, whether it's, you know, the HMOs, the hospital systems, they want those primary care doctors. They're trying to tie them up because they're the referrals. So if you're in private practice, you know, you're at risk of having your patients kind of siphoned off. And if you're a surgery center and the specialists aren't getting the cases and the surgeons to bring to the surgery center, that can be one real driver that'll make you unhappy, because with less patients, you start to see your income dwindling. Another part of that is also, and it doesn't seem to make sense, but what we see constantly is that insurers are very, very reluctant to give even cost of living increases to physicians in practice or surgery centers. The folks in the market and the businesses in the market are the supply companies, the implant companies, you know, even employees. Everybody expects increases every year, whether it's employees, they expect cost of living increases. And I haven't seen years where in a surgery center, implants and supplies don't go up in cost. So as an independent surgery center, if you can't pass on those costs or you can't get an increase of cost of living, Medicare is not giving it to you. And clearly the insurers who follow Medicare's lead and give you a percentage of Medicare aren't giving it to you. And even in private practice with costs constantly going up, your employee costs, rents have escalators in them. And I see the, you know, practice contracts staying fixed as well. So unless you have some size or you join, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, you join one of the big groups, you're really kind of in a no-win situation. It's the rarer market where physicians and surgery centers can have power over pricing. But that's a huge, huge driver in seeking a partner, and understanding your own market really will lead us towards how you evaluate and understand your market to pick the alternatives that may be available to you. Rich, anything to add to that? Rich, are you there?
It's the unmute that gets me every time, Jay. I think, what I want to add to that, right, is we've seen consolidation through the years, right? We've on the physician practice end, all across the continuum of healthcare there, and really ramped up through the years. So you're looking at some of these markets and you're seeing some of the smaller physician practices not as prevalent as it was back in the day. But I think what sometimes it's hard to see is on the partnership end, right? There's been a lot of consolidation on the buyers. 10, 20 years ago, there were a lot more strategic partners in the universe than there are today, right? So that consolidation isn't just one-sided. It's on both ends as scale seems to be the attribute that's most well-positioned for the future. Not the only attribute, but an important one. So with that, Jay, I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit and use case studies if we want, talking about typical practice or ASC client that is ready to go to market, and we can talk about two separate things. First is the method, the process. What's the typical process and what's the typical position that a client would like to be in before they head to market, and two. The different strategics and financial sponsors out there, and just the different pros and cons we see, and different fit strategies. So maybe we'll start at the top.
Sure.
And talk about preparing to go to market, both from a mindset and from an actual process standpoint.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point, because usually when we do speak to, let's just start with ASCs. But the same could be true for practices, is usually the prospective, buyer or the person seeking, a transaction. A lot of times they'll just say, I want to sell, I want to do something. And I think a lot of times they don't really understand themselves or really haven't thought it fully through, because I don't think they know what all the alternatives are to them. So, for example, usually when you sell a surgery center, typically the buyers tend to be what we call strategic buyers. A strategic buyer or a strategic partner is someone in that space who knows the business, who's in the business already, and they tend to be either large public surgery center companies that have large footprints, or local hospital systems. Typically, for surgery centers, financial buyers really won't have interest, because a financial buyer really wants an entity that they can grow into different areas, where surgery center usually is fixed. The doctors in the area usually are partners. And even though there can be upside, there's not a huge, huge platform for growth or becoming kind of a national or even regional entity with one surgery center. So that would leave the prospective sellers with kind of companies that are strategic. Rich, you want to go through some of the different type of strategics, because, they can be a little different, from a hospital system may differ from a surgery center strategic.
Sure. So when we think about, we'll use the typical ASC client as a little case study here. We have a surgery center looking to partner with a larger entity, to gain operational resources, hit on growth initiatives. What does that actually mean, right? So we, the first thing we usually do is sit down with the client, really try to assess their goals and assess their relationships in the market, both with health systems and any of the competition, whether it's independents or it's larger strategics like national ASC management companies. So in assessing the goals, we describe a lot of, what could these partners bring to you, right? And on the hospital, and I think you know, it's well documented in many, many, many cases over. There's really two main, well, three if you count the risk, right? But in terms of growth, the two main aspects, they call lift and loft. So in many markets, a hospital partner is able to come in with the correct structure and have an influence on the managed care piece for commercial payers and be able to raise rates on the existing business at the surgery center, which can be very impactful. The second growth item, right, is aligning, allowing that health system to or the ASC to be a outlet for decanting outpatient cases currently done at the hospital to the surgery center so that the interests are aligned and the center grows that way. And then the third way really is a little more, or the third aspect is really risk, right? Aligning with a large local hospital system so that interests are together and the competition aspect of it is mitigated, which can leave physician partners with the goal of viability in the future through aligning with the hospital. As we kind of shift gears here, and we're all, you know, right now we're talking about pros, to the strategic national ASC management companies. There are a handful left, large, well-run, extensive operational resource to provide, and in certain markets, they have leverage, right? And I think one of the, other than the operational expertise, one of the biggest pros of a strategic national ASC management company is that flexibility, partnering or finding a partner that is not a hospital. It can be appealing to many physicians and their surgery centers. Maybe a little more flexibility within structures and within governance documents. So when we look at it from the ASC side, you know, I think those are the main pros of each type of strategic. And Jay, would you like to get into maybe some of the, you know, we use the word cons, but maybe some of the attributes that don't appeal to certain physician goals as they start to evaluate partners?
Yeah, so first, all strategics, again, aren't equal, as Rich was saying, you know, from a local hospital system to one of the surgery center companies. So starting out just talking about the surgery center companies, because there are many, many surgery center development companies. Some of them have private equity backing, and some of them will try to buy surgery centers. So really, a question to ask is, even though they may seem like a big player, is do they have leverage on rates? Because again, for most markets and most surgery centers, the hospital systems and the bigger players will have better rates. And post-transaction, one of the benefits is being able to get, as Rich used the term, lift. And alternatively, if that system can't bring lift and you're, say, for lack of any better term, stuck with your rate, can they bring loft? Do they have an affiliation with a medical group that can all of a sudden bring you either more patients or new lines of business that may be more profitable? So again, this is where, you know, that deeper dive on understanding each particular market becomes important. Another part of kind of going along with or this transaction, the good news is, you know, the multiples being paid for surgery centers, especially a solid multi-specialty surgery center that's in network, the multiples are still relatively high, and the physicians can walk away with, you know, a good amount of cash and still have ownership. Typically, the strategic buyers, because they want to have a controlling interest, will usually want around 51% of the center, and typically they will want to manage, or sometimes they'll use one of the other surgery centers to manage on their behalf. So this is where one of the other cons comes in, is even though after a transaction, a lot of the physicians really care about the staff they work with. They've gotten to know their surgery center staff very well through the years. They worry about them being employed. Usually that's not an issue. Anybody who comes in will not want to usually muck with employees or change out or bring in their own staffs if the surgery center is running well. The issue comes in is that there is different management. Usually a bigger hospital system coming in, even if the surgery center companies tend to be more physician friendly, but any physician can tell you, usually, well, let me back into this and say this a different way as a doc. Most physicians don't love their local hospitals. They tolerate them, but in many cases, the relationships are more acrimonious because a lot of hospital systems tend to run with more of a top-down philosophy, and that can sometimes translate to the surgery center. So, for example, in one, you know, post, it wasn't one of ours, because hopefully we would look out for something like that, but one transaction I had seen, the hospital, even though they bought the surgery center, owned 51%, still saw the surgery center as competition to the hospital, and the surgery center wanted to add total joints to their outpatient mix of surgery, and the senior or controlling hospital partner wouldn't allow it, even though it would have benefited them as a partner in the surgery center. They saw it as detrimental because they were getting higher rates on the hospital side. So in that case, it brought kind of the, or really the synergies to a head and it made for an uncomfortable relationship. So that can be a real downside. And that's one of the things where due diligence comes in. You really want to make sure any partner you bring into your surgery center really has similar goals, can bring lift and or loft, and really help you grow post-transaction and not look at the transaction as the end of the deal, but looking at it almost as a beginning, a chance to have equitized or monetized, taken money off the table, and now have a chance to continue to earn a good living from this ancillary and grow into the future.
Yeah, I think that's right, Jay. And we always like to say when we talk to clients, and the liquidity event's great. However, a year or two after you sold a part of your business or majority of your business, ASC or physician practice, and partnered with another entity, a year or two later, the liquidity event kind of fades and you're sitting there and you want to know that you've done enough due diligence beforehand and vetted the partner to be comfortable in knowing that 2 years from now, you're still going to be happy and the practice or the surgery center is a better position than it was previously.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think those some of the lessons from the AST side translate well to the physician practice side. The physician practice side is a little more complex, though. So on the surgery center side, in just I'd say the majority of markets I see, and Rich, feel free to disagree on this or your experience has been a little different than mine, I see very few instances where a good strategic partner can't bring better rates and make for a center that will have more longevity into the future. On the physician practice side, I think it's a little different. Physicians come, they take their practice a little more, I guess, personally than their surgery center investment. On the physician practice side, this is the place they grew, they started in, they hired every employee, they were really part of it from the beginning. They spend most of their waking hours in their practices. So the idea of either selling part of it, finding a partner to come in, even if they believe it'll help their growth, becomes a really tough decision. And it becomes a more personal decision. And usually, again, there's more emotion throughout the process because they hold it so near and dear to their heart. So really, from our perspective, you know, and it sounds funny, yeah, we're there to do the financial transaction, but in a way, the first meetings with physician practice is almost, I don't want to say like a psychologist and their patient, but you're really, really trying to ascertain how they see their future and what they want out of it. So, for example, are they just looking, are they older or just tired of practice and just want to, for lack of a better term, get out? And in that case, they're just looking for someone to give them the most money they can get for their ownership interest. But like many of the docs we see, a lot of them want to stay in practice, and most of them, having been in private practice, a big majority of them want to stay independent. So that's really where this double-edged sword of the harder part comes in, is can you find them a partner that will allow them to feel like they're independent, not a, kind of as docs will term it, I don't want to become an employee and a cog in the wheel. So allow them to stay independent and still bring them the advantages of being part of a bigger system. Your thoughts on that, Rich?
Yeah, maybe this is a good time to segue. We talked a lot about strategics, right? Healthcare systems, large national management company. Maybe to dive into the financial sponsors, the various types out there, the different structures we're seeing, and why it might be appealing specifically to the physician practice end.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And once the physician made the decision that he'd like to stay independent, because the easy decision for a doctor is sell to a hospital system, usually they sell their practice at a fairly low multiple. So they're getting a little money, but then they're becoming an employee. But if they do have a desire to try to stay independent, this is where kind of the financial partner, and right now, it seems to be mostly private equity. To a smaller extent, businesses have been partnering with private equity and sometimes going out and acquiring practices, but primarily private equity. So, Rich, do you want to give an overview of the private equity landscape?
Sure. So, unlike the strategic side, we're seeing a lot of consolidation. Throughout recent years, we've seen a great influx of private equity entrants into the physician practice market. When we look through our Rolodex, there's hundreds of private equity firms focused on healthcare, different types of businesses within healthcare. So a much greater list, and very difficult to manage if you are a physician practice, understanding how many are out there, their backgrounds, as opposed to maybe looking at the local hospital partners, understanding who they are, long-standing experience. So less familiarity. In terms of what we're seeing with private equity physician structures, you'll hear a lot of talk about platform deals versus bolt-ons. The primary difference between each one is, with a platform, we see a private equity enter a geographic region or a certain specialty, find a physician practice, a large physician practice, stable, has all the qualities in terms of earnings and physician base, and a lot of times specialty. We'll see a lot of private equities focus on certain specialties. So, You know, we've seen ophthalmology and dermatology throughout the years, and recently we've seen more of a focus or a new focus on orthopedics and cardiovascular, as there are many different types of ancillaries associated with them. So some more growth opportunities for private equities to back financially and achieve on certain growth initiatives. So to recap, with these platform deals, they come in, they look to set up MSOs where physicians in their practice sell a certain portion, and then they achieve a liquidity event and also rolled equity in the MSO, and that MSO looks to grow from that region, using that physician practice as the platform. Once there's a platform, there has to be bolt-ons. So by bolt-on, we mean that there's an existing private equity physician practice partnership in a region and a specialty, and they look to acquire other smaller practices or of equal size to grow the entire pod. You know, more of a complicated structure, but this structure seems to be achieving a lot of the goals we're seeing of physician practices. Wanting some liquidity event, unlocking the value of their practice, which, you know, I'd say in the late 90s and 2000s had dwindled. So the only buyers we saw were, you know, hospital systems, or partners, I should say. Allows them to maintain independence and garner still a lot of control over their practice, day-to-day decisions. And lastly, achieve growth initiatives via the financial sponsor that they couldn't have done on their own without that access to capital. So in distilling it to, you know, those couple of main points, this is what we're seeing driving the physician practice private equity partnerships in recent years.
Yeah, I think that was a good overview, Rich. And just so everybody knows, you know, private equity, you know, a lot of times in the news and some of the political parties will bash private equity. They call it Wall Street. But the modern structure, how a big majority of the investments take place in physician groups, has evolved over the years. Back in the early 90s, late 80s, you had a couple of companies such as FICOR and MedPartners that were going in and purchasing 100% of the physician practice and putting the physicians basically on salary with some incentive, thinking they could run it a lot better. But that was a model that seemed to have failed through the years. The more modern example that seems to have been standing the test of time has been where private equity will come in, because in most states are called practice management states, where lay entities or non-physicians cannot profit from physician practices. So what happens in these cases are a separate entity called an MSO, a medical and management service organization, gets set up where the outside entity, the private equity firm, becomes a partner in the MSO and runs the business functions of the practice. And then the MSO, the business office, is used as really the central hub for the growth. So if you can see that, the practice is managed by the MSO, but to a certain extent, or to a large extent, one of our goals in any transaction is to keep as much independence for the physician group as possible. So the physician group still manage all the medical aspects of their practice. And this is very, very important. Most physicians don't want to be told how to practice. And through this MSO structure, the physicians are allowed to practice their own best medicine. And hopefully the MSO, or picking the right partner, will allow them to really bring good evidence-based medicine and really grow their practice and reputation, because now you have a financial partner that has the same goal of increasing the reputation of the group and increasing the footprint and bringing dollars to the table.
All right, Jay, I'm going to pretend to be physician leadership at a large orthopedic practice in a somewhat competitive market in a higher population setting. And I'm saying, okay, I've heard about health systems and strategics, private equity. What do we do now? What's the process? How do we get from hearing what you said today to a point, a place in time, we're in a position to have vetted certain partners and make a decision on who to select? Why don't you walk at a high level us through that process?
Okay. Well, I think the first part of that is really, again, I mentioned it earlier, is understanding the goals of the practice. So, for example, we went out recently on behalf of a practice, and we went out to probably 70 different private equity companies. And so understanding the needs of the practice, it's kind of narrowing or thinking through the companies that we think would have a similar philosophy to the group and growth plans. So part of, you know, going out and talking to the group and really taking it to the next step is really, again, understanding what they want. If I had to give you a generic understanding of what, say, an orthopedic group are usually coming in saying is, look, we're in our market. We're feeling the pressures of big hospital systems. We're having trouble hiring new orthopedists because the hospitals hire them before we do and offer them more money, and a lot of them want to become employees of a bigger system. And so what we're able to let them know is that by picking the right partner, that partner can help them with their growth plans and getting a bigger footprint. And this really comes into exploring, you know, the local market and where the growth opportunities are. So it's really, we go in, we engage the client, and then we have these discussions with them. We really go through their financials. We go through their plans for growth. We look at all their ancillaries. And then we try to play out what they think their growth plan would be. And then it's a matter of finding a partner that fits in with their philosophy. And a lot of times what happens is private equity seems to really badly want to partner with physician groups. So they'll be very flexible, not only about the price they come up with and very generous, but a lot of times they're very sensitive to wanting to give the physician leaders in the group a lot of autonomy to grow. And it's our job to come in and help mediate all this and also do due diligence on the companies that want to partner with the physician groups to make sure in the end that the physicians are getting what they had hoped for.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Can you talk to Rich?
Yeah, taking a list of, you know, 100 possible partnerships and proceeding with competitive auction style process with deadlines that A, avoids deal fatigue, while at the same time culling that list down to a handful or maybe one or two in which the client, the physician practice, fully understands what each one can offer, fully understands not only the quantitative aspects of an offer and the proposed structure, but also the qualitative aspects of what it means to be partnered going forward. So I think Jay hit the nail on the head. You have to know kind of who you are before you go to market, as it not only aids the physicians in understanding what partners are out there, but also, you know, aids someone like Jay or I in our discussions with possible partners to put the practice in the best possible light and bring to that physician leadership, that practice, the best possible offers that that are out there. And I'll say, Jay, you know, I think on the physician practice, and it's easy to say that you know, the vetting process for these private equity backed companies is pretty extensive, right? Multiple rounds of offer review, multiple rounds of not just introduction, but detailed level discussions on the proposed partnership and the value adds and the vision for the practice going forward.
You know, you just brought up an interesting point, and I think it's a good caveat for any of the physicians listening to this, which is a lot of the private equity groups have been going out and kind of contacting practices independently and making them offers. And one of the things we've seen is a lot of times they'll make fairly generous offers, but in almost every instance, when a private equity group came to a practice and the practice didn't take it, but came to us to run a process, and it's probably not only us as an investment bank, but others also, once you run the process and you create that bidding process or the auction process, I've never seen the private equity player's best offer not come up by at least 15 to 20% when they've been in the auction process. So even one of the Nobel Prize winners this year got, you know, their award for kind of the auction process and the psychology behind it and how beneficial it is. So I don't think we should lose that point. And just as I guess we're almost, our time's almost up, but as a parting note, you know, we get our clients from having clients who are satisfied. And so that isn't just getting a transaction done and getting money in their pocket. It's 1, 2, 5 years later, that client's still being happy with what we brought to them and their future. So it's important and really key that we find, or a good investment bank will find, the right partner, whether it's your facility or your practice. Rich, yeah, any thoughts to follow up?
I think that's right. You know, we can debate all day, health systems, other strategics, financial sponsors, the pros and cons. But in the end, you know, there has to be options for physicians, their practices, their ASCs. And it's our job to provide those options in a clear, concise, well-vetted way. Because I think once there are no more options, then healthcare is probably in a lot more trouble. But that's for another call, Jay.
Okay. Rich, thank you. And I think for anybody out there, I think you were told that if you have questions, you can answer them, and you're welcome to reach out to, you know, Rich and myself, Jay, at Merit Healthcare Advisors, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, great. Thank you so much. I want to thank Rich and Dr. Prozanski for your time and insights, and Merit Healthcare for sponsoring today's session. And to our attendees who joined us, thank you for making time to be a part of our Becker's ASC virtual event, and we look forward to seeing you at future events. Thank you.